justify for the past 20 years that taking taxpayers' money to pay for the school and the hospitals in Afghanistan, and now somehow that is not relative, now somehow that is not important. They went in 2001 to justify women's rights and used that to get into Afghanistan and said that women were being abused. Right now, women are not being abused, women are not starving, children are not starving. How come they're justifying it right now? How come they're so okay with it right now, now that the same people are ruling the country?
Pashtuna Durrani, want to thank you for being with us, activist and executive director of the educational nonprofit Learn Afghanistan, visiting fellow at the Women's Center at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Renee Feltz. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
À la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie, et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi, et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule, et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emportés par la foule qui nous entraîne, écrasés l'un contre l'autre.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the true death toll of houselessness in our community. How many lives we're losing and why? Scams are in full force. How you can keep from falling for them. And what the recent court rulings really mean on abortion rights in our country. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 16th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. A new report sheds light on what is causing dozens of people to die in the houseless community. KBOO's Jeffrey Wade takes this in-depth look.
At least 126 people experiencing houselessness died on Portland metro area streets in 2020, according to a recent annual report. The Domicile Unknown report began 9 years ago as a partnership with the State of Oregon, the Multnomah County Medical Examiner's Office, and Street Roots, a weekly publication covering homeless issues. 2020 shows the highest figure in the report's history, which uses data about the fatalities, including causes, locations, demographics, and timing throughout the year. Though the causes of death varied, nearly half were caused by methamphetamine use, with 62 fatalities, though the drug had significant factors in at least 80% of the final total statistic. Other alarming data collected shows a young average age of death, with 2020's findings being 46 years old. Despite COVID-19 being the defining event of 2020, no deaths from the recent report shows evidence the virus caused any of the fatalities and showed minimal document of outbreaks in shelters and virtually none among those living outside, according to Health Officer Dr. Jennifer Vines. Vines did note that due to restricted activities during the pandemic, data is likely underreported. County Chair Deborah Caffuri says the report is not only eye-opening but helpful in moving forward, and that many changes need to be made when it comes to houselessness issues in Multnomah County. During yesterday's morning press conference, Caffuri said, quote, "As much as we want one, there is no simple one-size-fits-all formula for addressing the complexity of homelessness," end quote, and emphasized the need for access to mental health services, addiction treatment, and basic health care. Wednesday's virtual press conference concerning 2020's domicile report is available to view online. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
Portlanders calling 911 are experiencing longer hold times, according to the Bureau of Emergency Communications. Recent findings reveal that calls answered are holding for an average time of 57 seconds as of November 2021. They've consistently failed this year to meet national standards for 911 answer times. The National Emergency Number Association has set a national standard that 95% of all calls should be answered within 20 seconds and 90% in 15 seconds. The Bureau's director, Bob Kazi, and City Commissioner in charge, Mingus Maps, say they need more people answering the phones. They say the city has failed to grow its dispatch staff. Moving forward, the city is also planning to launch a campaign to encourage people to refrain from calling 911 in non-life-threatening situations, freeing up those phone lines for more urgent emergencies. The Portland Bureau of Emergency Management's recent report shows the city will need 60 to 70 more dispatchers to achieve those national standards. Kazi has noted that a potential fix is coming soon by implementing a program that automatically calls 911 callers back. They're also trying to use more aggressive hiring with an aim of 35 to 40 new hires by the end of next year. Kazi and Maps agree that each individual will improve overall answering times. Since 2012, call volume has dramatically increased, up 38%, with the number of call takers remaining about the same at 110 dispatchers. The city also plans on increasing funding so its 311 line can route non-emergency calls out of the 911 center. Part of that campaign will focus on public awareness about when to call 911 or 311. The U.S. Supreme Court has been making some controversial decisions that could overturn decades of precedent when it comes to a woman's right to choose. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
The United States Supreme Court returned a lawsuit stemming from the Texas six-week abortion ban to a federal appeals court that had previously allowed the law to stay in effect. Texas State Bill 8 has been in effect for more than 3 months. The law bans abortions once cardiac activity is detected, usually at 6 weeks and before many women know they are pregnant. It makes no exceptions for rape or incest. U.S. Judge Robert Pittman blocked enforcement of the abortion ban, but an appeals court overturned his order 2 days later. Abortion rates fell by 50% compared to the same period last year, the first month the law was in effect. The law is unusual in that it is not intended to be enforced by state officials who typically oversee criminal prosecutions. Instead, it allows private citizens to sue doctors, clinics, and other abortion facilitators. Opponents of the ban already struggle to name defendants that could be sued to stop the law. Their recent lawsuit aimed to stop clerks from receiving and processing suits filed under State Bill 8. Last week, the Supreme Court ruled abortion providers can continue to challenge the Texas law, but weakened their legal strategy by removing nearly all the defendants in the suit and further limiting whom abortion supporters can sue. The court held that only state licensing officials can be sued, an outcome the clinic said would not prevent the filing of lawsuits against providers if abortions were to resume. The court did express significant concern over the law's unusual enforcement mechanism. Now, the Supreme Court has remanded the case to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and not the district court which previously blocked the law. This makes it much more likely that the abortion ban will remain in effect. Texas told the justices it plans to ask the appeals court to seek a definitive ruling from the Texas Supreme Court over the role licensing officials play in enforcing the abortion ban. The appeals court would decide whether to involve the state high court, which would put the case on hold. Texas has said it plans to keep the case bottled up at the appeals level for the foreseeable future. Mark Herron, the lawyer representing the clinics in their lawsuit, said, quote, "The Supreme Court left only a small sliver of our case intact. It is clear this part of the case will not stop vigilante lawsuits from being filed," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Fraud experts say opportunities rise for scammers during the holiday season. And if an online deal seems too good to be true, it probably is. But there are tips for protection from scammers trying to steal your holiday cheer. KBOO's Caitlin Bacchus reports on one effort from AARP in Oregon.
People are out and about shopping for the holidays. Unfortunately, scammers are looking to take advantage of their good cheer. Carmel Snyder with AARP Oregon says the season offers plenty of opportunities for thieves.
The point isn't to take the joy out of this time of year when we're talking about it or the fun out of gift giving, but to help you be aware so you can protect yourself and your loved ones.
According to a new AARP survey, more than a third of American adults have experienced fraud when buying a product through an online ad. Snyder says it's best to steer clear of these ads altogether when shopping online.
Avoid clicking on links, even if you think the message or ad is from a familiar retailer. Instead, use your web browser and type the web address you know to be the right one to avoid getting sent to a cloned site.
Snyder says scammers use clone sites that look like legitimate sites to steal people's information. Package deliveries are also ripe for theft and fraud. The AARP survey finds a quarter of people responding have had a package stolen from outside their home, and more than a third have received a fake notification about a shipment. Snyder says don't respond to these messages and be on the lookout for red flags that make the messages sound urgent. Scammers try to pressure people to act quickly before they have time to think about what they're doing. Snyder also says people shouldn't be embarrassed to report scams because they could be helping someone.
These are professionals. They do this all the time. They're very sophisticated and they're good at what they do. They steal billions of dollars from Americans every year.
Snyder hosts Watchdog Wednesday, a webinar where experts share tips on how to avoid scams. She says the event will become a podcast in 2022. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Caitlin Bacchus.
Health experts are worried that throughout the pandemic, children have not been getting vaccines, not just the COVID-19 vaccines, but also other common childhood shots that prevent serious illnesses. I talked to Dr. Jakiba Henderson, a nationally recognized expert on vaccine education and the chief medical and health officer with the March of Dimes. March of Dimes was really involved with getting the polio vaccine, and now you're worried about childhood vaccines too. And some of the research that you're looking at shows that still just the basic vaccines, not even the COVID vaccines, but just the basic vaccines for kids are not getting out to the children who need them, right?
Yes, and I am so very proud of the March of Dimes legacy. For more than 80 years, March of Dimes has led the fight for the health of all moms and babies, starting with the fight against polio that you mentioned, with funding for the polio vaccine. And so today our programs focus on addressing health equity and the ongoing fight for healthy moms and strong babies. And vaccines are a critical part of our mission from the very start of our organization and to keep moms and babies healthy. And one of these issues, of course, are issues with reduced immunization coverage during this COVID-19 pandemic against other preventable childhood illnesses. It's so important that people remember that, you know, at a time when a lot of us are focused on COVID-19 vaccination, we want to be sure that parents are also getting information and access that they need to stay up to date on routine childhood vaccinations, and to remind them that the illnesses that these vaccines prevent can put families and communities at risk of other deadly preventable diseases.
Oregon recently had our first three cases of the Omicron variant of COVID-19 confirmed. Two were people in their 20s, one is in their 30s. So relatively young people getting this new variant. And just recently, kids have been authorized to get vaccinated against COVID. What would you say to parents out there about getting their kids vaccinated?
Well, currently the CDC recommends that everyone ages 5 and older get a COVID-19 vaccine to help protect against COVID. And it's so important to remember that, you know, current vaccines are expected to protect against severe illness, hospitalizations, and death, even due to infection with the Omicron variant. So, you know, with other variants like the Delta variant that, you know, has swept our country, vaccines have remained effective at preventing severe illness, hospitalizations, and death. And the recent emergence of Omicron further emphasizes the importance of vaccination and boosters, just reminding those who've been vaccinated already that getting the booster adds extra protection. And so I would encourage families to get talk to their healthcare providers, get the information that they need to make an informed decision to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm. With the upcoming holiday season too upon us and people getting ready to gather, what would you advise people to do?
I would advise them to follow the CDC recommendations. You know, we still need to continue to be mindful about the different methods to prevent spread of this respiratory illness. You know, things like social distancing are still important. Things like wearing masks are still important. And as I previously mentioned, you know, being vaccinated is very important. We have to use all the modalities we have at hand to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm. In Washington and Oregon, there are areas that are still resistant even to getting the measles vaccine in their children. Is there an issue that's unique to the Pacific Northwest?
It's not. And, you know, there are studies that look at the different barriers to vaccination, and those barriers exist not just for COVID-19 vaccination. It exists also for those other vaccines that we're encouraging families to make sure they stay up to date on. People still have trust issues with, you know, mistrust of our healthcare providers, facilities, and our healthcare system, and fear around vaccine safety. One of the things I would just encourage people to go to reputable sources of information to make sure that when they're looking for information about making decisions around vaccination, that they go to reputable sources. At marchofdimes.org/vaccines, we have more information available on our webpage about vaccines to help people decide how to protect themselves and their families. The CDC also has ample information to help families make the best decision. But I just, more than anything, encourage people to go to reputable, reliable sources of information.
When you say that there are, because of the pandemic, there are fewer people getting vaccinated, what are the vaccines that kids are missing out on?
So the childhood vaccines that of illnesses that we hardly see anymore, some of those like measles and mumps and rubella, but also some of the common illnesses like influenza, making sure that children are protected against these illnesses that not only can cause severe illness, but actually can actually cause death. And to make sure that not only individual families, but our communities are not at risk for these common diseases that have been so well prevented by vaccines.
And that was Dr. Jakiba Henderson with A March of Dimes. You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned for Rose City Native Radio at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy this evening, then more clouds overnight, the low down to a chilly 34. And tomorrow those clouds continue, a high of 42. Should be a rainy weekend on the way with highs in the mid-40s, lows dipping to the 30s. Today in history, on this date in 1773, a group of Massachusetts colonists disguised as Mohawk Indians boarded three British ships and dumped more than 300 chests of tea into the Boston Harbor in what became known as the Boston Tea Party. The quote of the day is from one of the organizers, Samuel Adams. The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth. By the end of this century, between 74 to 94% of the years, Western states could see little to no snowfall if the efforts to stop fossil fuel emissions fail to reach their global targets. That's according to projections in a new report published in Nature Reviews Earth and Environment. Eric Alatas talks to Matt Rice with American Rivers.
Wyoming and other western states are projected to see multiple years in a row without any snow as soon as 35 years out, according to a new report, if efforts to rein in fossil fuel emissions fail to meet global targets. Almost 75% of water use in western states comes from snowpack, and Matt Rice with the group American Rivers says the report should be a red flag for water managers and policymakers to make plans now for a future with a lot less water.
How do we build resilience in this new, more arid future for the West? It's important to make sure that we have the ability to keep water in rivers, to dedicate water to the environment, for fish, for wildlife.
Rising temperatures have already cut snowpack by 20% below 1950s levels, and researchers project that by century's end, the vast majority of years, up to 94%, will see little or zero snowfall. Loss of snow will not just close ski resorts. Scientists have already linked vanishing snowfall to more frequent and catastrophic wildfires. The first sector likely to see water restrictions will be agriculture. Rice says investments are needed to help farmers and ranchers retool for more efficient irrigation and conservation because no one wants to see a mass dry up on lands across the West.
And it's not like when you remove water that that land, you know, comes back with native grasses and plants and shrubs. This is oftentimes land that has been irrigated for 100 plus years, and to take the water off of it, it creates a kind of deathscape.
Recommendations for adaptation include monitoring weather patterns to avoid flooding by capturing increasingly intense, if less frequent, downpours to refill aquifers. While conflicts over water rights have a long history in western states, Rice notes the issue traditionally has cut across political boundaries.
As scarcity increases, my fear is that it will digress into a partisan issue, or rural versus urban when it comes to water. These challenges are so significant that we can't afford not to all be in this together.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
Congress raises the debt ceiling and approves the annual defense spending bill. President Biden visits Kentucky to survey storm damage. And the Fed is ending its pandemic stimulus initiative. For more on the stories affecting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2021 Talks.
Any interest that you're paying on a loan will be increased if, in fact, we did not lift the debt ceiling.
The House of Representatives voted early Wednesday morning to bump the nation's debt limit to nearly $31 trillion. The measure passed 221 to 209 and now goes to President Joe Biden for his signature. Politico reports the move, which increased the debt limit by $2.5 trillion, will carry the U.S. into 2023 without the need to raise the borrowing cap further. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said if the measure had failed, the U.S. could have defaulted on its loans, resulting in widespread economic fallout.
Even the discussion of it a few years ago lowered our credit rating, the United States credit rating, and that was not a good thing for our economy.
Meanwhile, Congress is working on other items on its holiday to-do list, including the Build Back Better framework, which Pelosi says she's hopeful will get through both chambers by year's end. But Republicans have many reservations about the program. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina says the complexities in the framework's child care provisions would drive up costs and limit options for families.
This is literally an attempt to fundamentally transform what it means to take care of your child in the place you want to send your child.
Democrats say the bill would ensure no family pays more than 7% of their income on child care. The Senate has passed the 2022 National Defense Authorization Act, an annual bill to set spending priorities for the Pentagon and the armed forces. Among many other things, the nearly $770 billion package includes an additional $50 million in U.S. military aid to Ukraine, as Russian forces have been amassing along the Ukraine-Russian border, raising tensions between the two nations. Senator John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, says the funding will help prevent further incursions into Ukrainian territory.
Ukraine has spent years dealing with a Russian invasion that threatens to push further into its sovereign territory, and we should be supporting the efforts of this free nation to defend itself from Russian aggression.
President Joe Biden visited Kentucky Wednesday to survey damage from weekend storms that killed at least 74 people in the state, injured hundreds, and destroyed entire towns. FEMA and disaster relief groups have already been deployed to the region, and President Biden says the federal government will cover the state's disaster relief costs for 30 days.
It includes debris removal, cost of overtime and law enforcement, emergency service personnel, and shelter.
And finally, the Federal Reserve is tapering back its pandemic economic stimulus strategies. According to the New York Times, the move is an attempt to curb the recent jump in inflation, but could lead to higher interest rates in 2022. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Federal officials arrest two artists in Washington state for false claims of Native identity. The Cherokee Nation takes a big step toward building a new $400 million health facility. And some high school students benefit from a large donation of musical instruments. Here's the latest National Native News.
An investigation that included undercover purchases led to federal charges against two Washington state men for allegedly falsely representing themselves as Native artists. The Justice Department says the two men had work in two galleries in Seattle's Pike Place Market. Biographies of the artists claimed they were Native American. Other references to items sold online also claimed to be from a Native artist. Jerry Van Dyke represented himself as Nez Perce, but is not an enrolled member. Louis Anthony Rath falsely claimed to be a member of the San Carlos Apache tribe. Undercover agents purchased works by the men from the galleries. A search warrant served at the home of one of the men revealed he also had feathers from eagles, owls, hawks, and other federally protected birds. The owners of the galleries have not been charged. The Ho-Chunk Nation Supreme Court ruled against the tribal president in a dispute over an emergency budget passed last year. The Green Bay Press Gazette reports the court decided the tribal legislature acted properly in approving the budget in response to the pandemic that included cuts to the president's office. President Marlon White Eagle filed a lawsuit in tribal court claiming the legislative branch had no authority to make budget decisions that affected his office. Legislative officials argued the emergency budget avoided what would have been much more devastating economic consequences. President Joe Biden nominated Navajo citizen Sunshine Suzanne Sykes to the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. She is currently a Superior Court judge for Riverside County, the first Native American to hold that seat. Her previous work includes time with California Indian Legal Services. The White House notes, if confirmed, she would be the first Article III judge in California and the first from the Navajo Nation. High schools across the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation are benefiting from the influx of 900 new musical instruments. The donation is part of the Tunes for Tots program by the rock band Widespread Panic. Richard Tubols reports.
The nonprofit organization Conscious Alliance brought the most recent delivery to Pine Ridge High School. Music teacher Ann Chesley says she's been keeping the school's music department alive any way she could.
A lot of the instruments that we have, I've put together. I've bought at garage sales and pawn shops. Big Borrow and Steal, everywhere we could get them. And these are new. These are specifically what we want, what we ask for.
Conscious Alliance collaborates with musicians to raise food awareness and is committed to youth empowerment initiatives. Natalie Han is the organization's Pine Ridge Field Director.
Our belief at Conscious Alliance is music is medicine, you know, and we have so many gifted and talented young Lakotas that just need the resources in order to, you know, express themselves and share their talent.
The donation not only supports the high school music programs, but also the Rock the Res music program and the Pine Ridge Flute Society. Will Peters directs the society.
A lot of these Flute Society members have graduated, they've gone on. But since they started, the recognition from their own, our own people comes from when they're asked to come to play at a wake or a funeral or at a wedding or at a Sundance to offer a spiritual uplifting.
Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, and Little Moon High Schools are also receiving instruments. In Pine Ridge, I'm Richard Tubols.
The Cherokee Nation unveiled plans for a new $400 million health care facility. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskins signed the legislation to replace the 40-year-old hospital in Tahlequah. The original hospital was designed for about 60,000 patients per year. The paper reports the actual number of patients in recent years is close to 10 times that. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
The holiday hustle and bustle can overwhelm Fido and Fluffy. Just like humans, pet stress levels are often reduced with enough fresh air and exercise. Roz Brown explains how you can meet your pet's needs and your own amid all that shopping, gift wrapping, and partying.
Whether your pet is shy or outgoing, keeping them happy and healthy during the busy holidays can be a challenge. Your curious cat might view a tree adorned with ornaments as a new toy, so make sure it's securely anchored. Dogs, on the other hand, like to chew on things and won't know seasonal plants such as evergreens and poinsettias are toxic. Desiree Colley with Albuquerque's Animal Welfare Department says if guests are coming or parties planned, it's best to prepare, much like pet owners do for the 4th of July.
Keep them in a bedroom, give them their favorite toy, have a TV going so it muffles the sounds outside, so then they're not feeling overwhelmed when you have a lot of people in your house that they don't know.
Through December 31st, Albuquerque's Operation Silent Night is collecting financial donations along with small toys for cats and dogs, including treats, beds, brushes, collars, and other items for pets waiting to be adopted at the city's animal welfare shelters. In addition to taking it easy on scraps from the table, Colley reminds pet owners to be mindful of what gifts are under the Christmas tree, especially if there's no indication as to what's inside.
It may be cookies, it may be candy, and of course, dogs have a good sniffer, and so they might think that would be a good present to open for themselves.
Colley also says pets appreciate sticking to their routine as much as possible.
And so when it gets changed, you have to be a little bit more understanding, reassure them that everything is okay, and maybe love them a little extra.
If your pet will be boarded for the holidays, Colley says they might be overwhelmed by all the different smells in a kennel and recommends bringing an item for them to snuggle.
Make sure you give them the dog's blanket, favorite toy, their bed, so they have that sense of smell. So if they have something like a security blanket kind of thing, would be ideal.
This is Roz Brown.
You're listening to an end of your membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Jeffrey Wade, and Caitlin Backus. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. So if you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned for Making Contact. That's up next.